This is a Triple J podcast.
A FinDom and FinSub relationship might just be something that's totally online and there's never in any in-person contact.
So in our last episode, we delved a bit into PayPigs and FinDom and spoke to a few people who are PayPigs themselves, but people who are financial dominatrix themselves. I think that it's a really interesting dynamic, and I think that there's so much psychology that goes into it. So I'd really love to unpack that with you. Dr. Sarah Ashton is with me. She's a psychologist and founder of Ships. So Sarah, we've been kind of throwing around, like I feel like it's become a real buzzword, PayPig, but how would you actually define PayPig?
Yeah, so within the financial domination relationship, the PayPig is the person who's the submissive and they usually pay money or gifts to the financial dominant.
So then the financial dominatrix is the person who is demanding the money, right?
Yeah, so they're the one who receives the gifts, who receives the money, and usually there's some kind of control inherent in this or direction inherent in what is being asked for or conversely what has been given.
The PayPig that we spoke to said that he liked degradation, so kind of being told like, you're useless, like pay me money. Does that always come hand in hand with this dynamic, or does it differ and depend?
Yeah, so in any dominant and submissive dynamic, there can be lots of different elements to that, just like any kind of relationship. So it's based on individual preferences, individual sexuality, individual personality, and the consensual agreement between those two people. So degradation can definitely be part of it, and it can be really arousing for some people.
Yeah, what are some of the arrangements that you've seen or that, you know, are quite common? Is it just, you know, money, gifts, like what can it look like?
Yeah, so it's kind of a spectrum all the way from a relationship that exists solely online. It's completely anonymous and someone is just sending money with there being no direction around how it's going to be used, all the way to complete financial domination where the dominant has control over the submissive's finances entirely and everything that they do with their money. But, you know, in terms of what the money can be used for, it can be something that is inherently degrading. Like, for example, the submissive might be told that the dominant is going to go out on a date with somebody else and or is going to, you know, have sex with somebody else and use the money in some way to facilitate this. So there's inherent kind of degradation in the way that the money is used. Or it might be used for things that the submissive experiences as sort of like worship, like buying beautiful things, buying expensive things. Yeah, so it really is about the what it elicits for the submissive and what it elicits for the dominant and the nature of the relationship that feels good to both people.
I think when it comes to certain kinks and fetishes, and we've spoken about this before with the BDSM community, like a lot of people think that it's like all loose and, you know, it really extreme and hectic, but usually boundaries and the arrangement and dynamics discussed from the beginning, right?
Yeah, so the difference between abuse and BDSM and kinks is consent, right? That all the parameters of the relationship and what will happen within the dynamic and the nature of the behaviors are discussed and agreed on beforehand. And as, you know, things play out in the relationship or the dynamic progresses, there's also the inclusion of things like safe words so that both people have the ability to communicate about their boundaries and their needs.
Yeah, the FinDom that we spoke to basically said that, like, they will push and push and push, but it's all been agreed. Like, there's, you know, safe words, and he knows when he can absolutely, like, put the boundary down and be like, right, I'm not buying anymore, or that's absolutely the budget, it's, you know. So I think, you know, when people think about FinDom and PayPigs, they might associate it a bit with sugar daddies and just assume that the person's this really rich person that, you know, is just trying to get rid of all their money and gets off on this. But it can be people who are just kind of getting by as well, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that this person's extremely rich.
Yeah. So, you know, what you're focusing on is what the exchange is eliciting. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a large amount of money to elicit a feeling of degradation or to engage that control and power dynamic. So, a lot of people, they're just on a normal salary. They don't necessarily have a lot of money. And I guess one of the other distinguishing factors from, say, a sugar daddy is every relationship is different and the agreement is different for every person. But some of the time, a sugar daddy and sugar baby relationship will involve sexual contact in some way, or romantic contact, or in-person contact, like dates and things like that. Whereas a findom and finsub relationship might just be something that's totally online and there's never in any in-person contact. And there may not be any contact which is sexual in nature. However, that doesn't mean that what's actually happening isn't eliciting sexual arousal from the or for the findom, fin sub, sorry.
For the PV. Well, let's chat about that, Sarah, because we've spoken in depth before about the psychology behind maybe someone, you know, having daddy issues, or how with foot fetishes, there's certain parts of the brain that can potentially be linked. Where does someone get a findom fetish from?
Yeah, so look, this is it's a complex topic and complex question, and I think it's really different for every single person. So whenever we talk about the origins of a fetish or a sexual preference, it's important that we don't make generalizations about, you know, this is the case for every single person. But some of the theories around how fetishes or arousal patterns start is that there can be our first sexual experiences are extremely formative. So we have a neurological pairing that occurs between some of our really formative, arousing sexual experiences and all the elements that are involved in that dynamic. So that can be sensory elements, it can be relational dynamics. And then that's paired with the reward of arousal and orgasm. And that is a powerful neurological pathway and reinforcement that then forms the blueprint of what we then find arousing moving forward in our life. So if there had been some element of your initial sexual experiences which involved, you know, some aspect of control or domination, then that can be a pathway. Another pathway is that sometimes if people have experienced some form of trauma in their past that involves control or domination or even abuse, that creates a neurological map in our mind. And if we take that situation or aspects of that situation, like control and a lack of control, and then we add consent, autonomy, and arousal and orgasm to that, we can actually create a new neurological associations with this, and it can actually be quite a healing experience. So this is sort of one of the theories around why people might eroticize that dynamic, because it's actually our brain's way of adapting and kind of building up new associations with something that was previously painful.
Wow, that's so interesting. I actually had no idea. That makes so much sense when you think about, you know, just other certain psychological issues that you might have and you go to a therapist for, or you go and do you go see a psych and you do certain types of therapy, and then, you know, some of it can be exposure, so that when you put it like that, makes so much sense. A few people, Sarah, I'm really curious to get your perspective on this. A few people in our DMs when talking about this topic said that it's toxic and that people were being taken advantage of. Like someone here said, as someone all across kink and the like, findom by itself is so toxic. It encourages toxic personalities to push boundaries. It makes me sick. Plus the non-sex workers just being mean to make an easy dollar. And then someone here was like, this is neoliberalism and capitalism at their maximum, translated into the fetishization of extremely unequal power relations. What do you think about those comments? Are they just misjudged a little bit?
Yeah, so as with any kind of kink or BDSM behavior, if we just look at the behavior, it can seem abusive or toxic, right? But with any kind of sexual behavior, we really can't make a judgment about whether or not it's helpful or harmful based on how it appears to other people. Now, of course, you could engage in this in a toxic way. Of course, you could engage in this in a way that is harmful to both people, but that doesn't actually mean that it's always the case. What matters is that both people are aware of what's going on in the dynamic and they are freely consenting to what is going on, and that they ask themselves the question, is this doing any harm to me? And that can sit on a spectrum, you know, so it can just be like, oh, I'm a bit short on money this week, you know, is that okay? Or it could be reinforcing other really unhelpful psychological dynamics. So for example, sometimes people use kinks because they're so immersive and it allows them to avoid whatever they're experiencing in their life. So it's a bit of an escape, right? And what that might mean is that they're actually not dealing with whatever they're avoiding, right? So whatever the difficult emotion is that's coming up, whatever the difficult circumstance is, maybe they're not happy in their relationship. And so continuing to engage in this dynamic means that they're not actually, you know, managing the issue, right? So the behavior in and of itself might not be harmful, but what it's reinforcing may end up causing harm. So it's really nuanced, you know, and with any sexual behavior, we have to ask ourselves, you know, how do I feel about this? Is this consistent with who I want to be and, you know, the values that I have? And is it doing any harm to me at all? And is it consensual? And then if it ticks all of those boxes, then it's nobody's business. Go for it.
Yeah. And also, like, it's a lot to probably try and unpack yourself, especially if this is a new dynamic. Would you recommend going and seeing like a psychiatrist, a therapist, and working through this and getting them to help you come up with some of the reasons you might be entering this dynamic, or to make sure that it is safe and consensual?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we do at SHIP. So it's impossible to see everything about ourselves. You know, most people never really observe and look at their sexuality or what is underlying their sexual behavior. And it's so important to have a safe space where you can have somebody else, you know, guide you through that journey. Mm-hmm. And we've all got professional training to do that. So that can be a really good option. If you're feeling any uncertainty or you're, you know, wanting to understand more about what's going on for you, we hold a really affirming, safe space to help you on that journey.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been so interesting. And yeah, I think will be super beneficial for anyone listening who might be navigating this or curious about it. So I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.